Chapter 10. A morning adventure. Although the morning was raw, and although the fog still seemed heavy, I say seemed, for the windows were so encrusted with dirt that they would have made midsummer sunshine dim, I was sufficiently forewarned of the discomfort within doors at that early hour, and sufficiently curious about London to think it a good idea on the part of Miss Jellyby when she proposed that we should go out for a walk. "Ma won't be down for ever so long," she said, "and then it's a chance. If breakfast's ready for an hour afterwards, they dawdle so. As to Pa, he gets what he can, and goes to the office. He never has what you would call a regular breakfast. Priscilla leaves him out the loaf and some milk, when there is any, overnight. Sometimes there isn't any milk, and sometimes the cat drinks it. But I'm afraid you must be tired, Miss Summerson, and perhaps you would rather go to bed." "I am not at all tired, my dear," said I, "and would much prefer to go out." "If you're sure you would," returned Miss Jellyby, "I'll get my things on." Ada said she would go too, and was soon astir. I made a proposal to Peepy, in default of being able to do anything better for him, that he should let me wash him, and afterwards lay him down on my bed again. To this he submitted with the best grace possible, staring at me during the whole operation, as if he never had been, and never could again be, so astonished in his life, looking very miserable also, certainly, but making no complaint, and going snugly to sleep, as soon as it was over. At first I was in two minds about taking such a liberty, but I soon reflected that nobody in the house was likely to notice it. What with the bustle of dispatching Peepy, and the bustle of getting myself ready and helping Ada, I was soon quite in a glow. We found Miss Jellyby trying to warm herself at the fire in the writing room, which Priscilla was then lighting with a smutty parlor candlestick, throwing the candle in to make it burn better. Everything was just as we had left it last night, and was evidently intended to remain so. Below stairs the dinner cloth had not been taken away, but had been left ready for breakfast. Crumbs, dust, and waste paper were all over the house. Some pewter pots and a milk can hung on the area railings. The door stood open, and we met the cook round the corner coming out of a public house, wiping her mouth. She mentioned, as she passed us, that she had been to see what o'clock it was. But before we met the cook, we met Richard, who was dancing up and down Thavies Inn to warm his feet. He was agreeably surprised to see us stirring so soon, and said he would gladly share our walk. So he took care of Ada, and Miss Jellyby and I went first. I may mention that Miss Jellyby had relapsed into her sulky manner, and that I really should not have thought she liked me much, unless she had told me so. "Where would you wish to go?" she asked. "Anywhere, my dear," I replied. "Anywhere's nowhere," said Miss Jellyby, stopping perversely. "Let us go somewhere at any rate," said one. She then walked me on very fast. "I don't care," she said. "Now, you are my witness, Miss Summerson, I say I don't care, but if he was to come to our house with his great, shining, lumpy forehead night after night till he was as old as Methuselah, I wouldn't have anything to say to him. Such asses as he and Ma make of themselves." "My dear," I remonstrated, in allusion to the epithet and the vigorous emphasis Miss Jellyby set upon it. "Your duty as a child, oh. Don't talk of duty as a child, Miss Summerson. Where's Ma's duty as a parent? All made over to the public and Africa, I suppose. Then let the public and Africa show duty as a child. It's much more their affair than mine. You are shocked, I dare say." "Very well, so am I shocked too. So we are both shocked, and there's an end of it." She walked me on faster yet. "But for all that, I say again, he may come, and come, and come, and I won't have anything to say to him. I can't bear him. If there's any stuff in the world that I hate and detest, it's the stuff he and Ma talk. I wonder the very paving stones opposite our house can have the patience to stay there, and be a witness of such inconsistencies, and contradictions as all that sounding nonsense, and Ma's management." I could not but understand her to refer to Mr. Quayle, the young gentleman who had appeared after dinner yesterday. I was saved the disagreeable necessity of pursuing the subject by Richard and Ada coming up at a round pace, laughing and asking us if we meant to run a race. Thus interrupted, Miss Jellyby became silent and walked moodily on at my side, while I admired the long successions and varieties of streets, the quantity of people already going to and fro, the number of vehicles passing and repassing, the busy preparations in the setting forth of shop windows, and the sweeping out of shops, and the extraordinary creatures in rags secretly groping among the swept-out rubbish for pins and other refuse. "So, cousin," said the cheerful voice of Richard to Ada behind me, "we are never to get out of Chancery. We have come by another way to our place of meeting yesterday, and by the great seal, here's the old lady again." Truly, there she was, immediately in front of us, curtsying, and smiling, and saying with her yesterday's air of patronage, "The wart's in jarndyce. Very happy, I am sure." "You are out early, ma'am," said I as she curtsied to me. "Yes. I usually walk here early. Before the court sits. It's retired. I collect my thoughts here for the business of the day," said the old lady mincingly. "The business of the day requires a great deal of thought. Chancery justice is so very difficult to follow." "Who's this, Miss Summerson?" whispered Miss Jellyby, drawing my arm tighter through her own. The little old lady's hearing was remarkably quick. She answered for herself directly. "A suitor, my child. At your service. I have the honor to attend court regularly. With my documents. Have I the pleasure of addressing another of the youthful parties in Jarndyce?" said the old lady, recovering herself, with her head on one side, from a very low curtsy. Richard, anxious to atone for his thoughtlessness of yesterday, good-naturedly explained that Miss Jellyby was not connected with the suit. "Ha!" said the old lady. "She does not expect a judgment? She will still grow old. But not so old. Oh, dear, no. This is the garden of Lincoln's Inn. I call it my garden. It is quite a bower in the summer time, where the birds sing melodiously. I pass the greater part of the long vacation here, in contemplation. You find the long vacation exceedingly long, don't you?" We said yes, as she seemed to expect us to say so. When the leaves are falling from the trees, and there are no more flowers in bloom to make up in two nosegays for the Lord Chancellor's court, said the old lady, the vacation is fulfilled, and the sixth seal, mentioned in the revelations, again prevails. Pray come and see my lodging. It will be a good omen for me. Youth, and hope, and beauty are very seldom there. It is a long, long time since I had a visit from either. She had taken my hand, and leading me and Miss Jellyby away, beckoned Richard and Ada to come too. I did not know how to excuse myself, and looked to Richard for aid. As he was half amused and half curious and all in doubt how to get rid of the old lady without offense, she continued to lead us away, and he and Ada continued to follow, our strange conductress informing us all the time, with much smiling condescension, that she lived close by. It was quite true, as it soon appeared. She lived so close by that we had not time to have done humoring her for a few moments before she was at home. Slipping us out at a little side gate, the old lady stopped most unexpectedly in a narrow back street, part of some courts and lanes immediately outside the wall of the inn, and said, "This is my lodging. Pray walk up." She had stopped at a shop over which was written Crook, Rag and Bottle Warehouse. Also, in long thin letters, Crook, dealer in marine stores. In one part of the window, was a picture of a red paper mill at which a cart was unloading a quantity of sacks of old rags. In another was the inscription Bonespot. In another, Kitchen Stuffpot. In another, Old Ironbot. In another, Waste Paperbot. In another, Ladies and Gentlemen's Wardrobespot. Everything seemed to be bought, and nothing to be sold there. In all parts of the window were quantities of dirty bottles, blacking bottles, medicine bottles, ginger beer and soda water bottles, pickle bottles, wine bottles, ink bottles. I am reminded by mentioning the latter that the shop had in several little particulars the air of being in a legal neighborhood and of being, as it were, a dirty hanger-on and disowned relation of the law. There were a great many ink bottles. There was a little tottering bench of shabby old volumes outside the door, labeled law books, all at 90. Some of the inscriptions I have enumerated were written in law hand, like the papers I had seen in Kenjan Carboy's office, and the letters I had so long received from the firm. Among them was one, in the same writing, having nothing to do with the business of the shop, but announcing that a respectable man aged 45 wanted engrossing or copying, to execute with neatness and dispatch. Addressed to Nemo, care of Mr. Crook, within. There were several second-hand bags, blue and red, hanging up. A little way within the shop door lay heaps of old crackled parchment scrolls, and discolored and dog's-eared law papers. I could have fancied that all the rusty keys, of which there must have been hundreds huddled together as old iron, had once belonged to doors of rooms, or strong chests in lawyers' offices. The litter of rags tumbled partly into, and partly out of a one-legged wooden scale, hanging without any counterpoise from a beam, might have been counselors' bands and gowns torn up. One had only to fancy, as Richard whispered to Ada and me, while we all stood looking in, that yonder bones in a corner, piled together and picked very clean, were the bones of clients, to make the picture complete. As it was still foggy and dark, and as the shop was blinded besides by the wall of Lincoln's Inn, intercepting the light within a couple of yards, we should not have seen, so much but for a lighted lantern, that an old man in spectacles and a hairy cap was carrying about in the shop. Turning towards the door, he now caught sight of us. He was short, cadaverous, and withered, with his head sunk sideways between his shoulders, and the breath issuing invisible smoke from his mouth, as if he were on fire within. His throat, chin, and eyebrows were so frosted with white hairs, and so gnarled with veins and puckered skin, that he looked from his breast upward like some old root in a fall of snow. "Hi, hi," said the old man, coming to the door. "Have you anything to sell?" We naturally drew back and glanced at our conductress, who had been trying to open the house door with a key she had taken from her pocket, and to whom Richard now said that as we had had the pleasure of seeing where she lived, we would leave her, being pressed for time. But she was not to be so easily left. She became so fantastically and pressingly earnest in her entreaties, that we would walk up, and see her apartment for an instant, and was so bent, in her harmless way, on leading me in, as part of the good omen she desired, that I, whatever the others might do, saw nothing for it but to comply. I suppose we were all more or less curious. At any rate, when the old man added his persuasions to hers and said, I, please her. It won't take a minute. Come in, come in. Come in through the shop, if t'other door's out of order." We all went in, stimulated by Richard's laughing encouragement and relying on his protection. "My landlord, Crook," said the little old lady, condescending to him from her lofty station as she presented him to us. "He is called among the neighbors the Lord Chancellor. His shop is called the Court of Chancery. He is a very eccentric person. He is very odd. Oh, I assure you he is very odd." She shook her head a great many times, and tapped her forehead with her finger to express to us, that we must have the goodness to excuse him, for he is a little said the old lady with great stateliness. The old man overheard, and laughed. "It's true enough," he said, "going before us with the lantern, that they call me the Lord Chancellor and call my shop Chancery. And why do you think they call me the Lord Chancellor and my shop Chancery?" "I don't know, I am sure," said Richard rather carelessly. "You see," said the old man, stopping, and turning round, "they, aye. Here's lovely hair. I have got three sacks of ladies' hair below, but none so beautiful and fine as this. What color, and what texture! That'll do, my good friend, said Richard, strongly disapproving of his having drawn one of Ada's tresses through his yellow hand. You can admire as the rest of us do without taking that liberty. The old man darted at him a sudden look which even called my attention from Ada, who, startled and blushing, was so remarkably beautiful that she seemed to fix the wandering attention of the little old lady herself. But as Ada interposed and laughingly said she could only feel proud of such genuine admiration, Mr. Crook shrunk into his former self as suddenly as he had leaped out of it. You see, I have so many things here, he resumed, holding up the lantern, of so many kinds, and all as the neighbors think, but they know nothing, wasting away and going to rack and ruin, that's why they have given me and my place a christening. And I have so many old parchments and papers in my stock. And I have a liking for rust, and must and cobwebs, and all's fish that comes to my net. And I can't abear to part with anything I once lay hold of, or so my neighbors think, but what do they know? Or to alter anything, or to have any sweeping, nor scouring, nor cleaning, nor repairing going on about me. That's the way I've got the ill name of Chancery. I don't mind. I go to see my noble and learned brother pretty well every day when he sits in the inn. He don't notice me, but I notice him. There's no great odds betwixt us. We both grub on in a muddle. Hi, Lady Jane. A large gray cat leaped from some neighboring shelf on his shoulder and startled us all. Hi. Show 'em how you scratch. Hi. Dear, my lady, said her master. The cat leaped down and ripped at a bundle of rags with her tigerish claws, with a sound that it set my teeth on edge to hear. She'd do as much for anyone I was to set her on, said the old man. I deal in catskins among other general matters, and hers was offered to me. It's a very fine skin, as you may see, but I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.